Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're back. It's your favorite time of the week where you download the crazy sheets, you get a cold drink if you're at evening time, you get a hot cup of coffee if you're in the morning, you get ready to start talking about some college football. I'm Mark, I'm here in the College Football Podcasting Studio. Scotty, how the hell are you and where the hell are you?
Man, I'm good. I'm in the land of the Bengal Tigers, not LSU, but Cincinnati.
Meatpacking.
Gotta love some Cincy, baby. Right. Gotta love some Cincy. As you wear a Bengals hat, as we do this podcast, people wish we video this and put it on YouTube, because there we do wear some great gear. People would get a kick out of my headphones.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And my Bengals hat, which is autographed by Randy Bullock, Texas A&M Hall of Famer, kicker for the Bengals last year. If you DM me, I'll tell you what I had to tell him to get the hat. Send it to me. But Scott, since we last spoke, let's recap really quick. Don't need to go through all the history, but for y'all that have been with us a long time, you probably saw last year, mid-December, we shut it down. We didn't come back on the air, and that wasn't because we didn't want to be here, but my man Scott got the COVIDs and was in the hospital and beat the COVID. And after 10 years of doing this together, I just couldn't do it by myself.
Man, we whipped the COVID. The Baylor Bears won the Natty in men's basketball.
That is true.
And the Bulldogs have won the baseball national championship. It is officially a freak zone when the Bears and the Bulldogs both win a Natty in the same year. I go to the hospital for the first time in my life, and literally there's nothing that could surprise me if it happens next.
No. If you're going to take a flyer for somebody to win the Natty in football this year, I'd say go for it. Because you may want to step away from the Blue Bloods a little bit and go from there. But Scott, a lot of things have happened in college football. Let's dive into a couple. I'll hit them on the high notes. You can pound me with the details, and then we'll jump into the conference everybody's waiting to talk about. But, man, college football has gotten nutty with the transfer portal. I have never been against the transfer portal, but, man, I am amazed at how many kids go in and out of the portal now, as well as the coaches that are working their asses off to work the portal. It's almost become college free agency. And I think Pandora's box is open, and there's no way we're going to reel it back.
No, there's no way we're going to reel it back in. That's exactly what I was scared of. These kids don't pay attention. They pick a school based on everything wrong. And then they get there and they're unhappy. And they think, oh, I need to go look for somewhere else. No, you made your choice. Put your head down. That philosophy's out the window. Put your head down and go to work and beat the guy out ahead of you. That no longer exists. It's screw it. I'm going to transfer. I'm going to leave. Pick a school based on their depth chart. Pick a school based on where, if you blow your knee out or whatever, get in a car wreck, can't ever play football again, that you're still going to have a good time. I listened to Greg McElroy say that's how he ended up at Alabama. And that's the way you pick it. But that's why McElroy didn't transfer until he didn't start until the end of his career, because he was there as a player. He was enjoying school. Man, pick the place you're going to get the best education. It's got a good school for what you want to major in and what you want to do with your life. You're probably not going to play in the NFL. But man, this is transfer central. And it's amazing to me the guys that do it. I mean, look, it's not hard to see Mike Leach leaving and State getting a Washington State right wide receiver. That's not hard to figure out.
Right.
But, I mean, you have got LSU, Florida. I mean, these guys are losing guys left and right, and then they're bringing them in left and right. I mean, we got a wide receiver transfer from Ohio State going to Bama. What the hell's the difference in those two schools? You're still competing against 100 studs. If you can't play at Ohio State, you ain't going to play at Bama. But if you're going to play at Bama, you can play at Ohio State. It's nitwit central. That's the way I really feel about the transfer portal.
Yeah,
I think it's masking a lot of coaches that do a poor job. And I'm on the recruiting trail, and I the guys that don't do a good job in recruiting, the transfer portal is now a bailout zone. And that's Dan Mullen. That's guys like that are not recruiting to the national championship standard. And, man, they're out but their transfer portal to it. I mean, they are out there getting players in that deal. I mean, you got Georgia, who's putting together huge classes, and they literally go get the number one tight end in the country from LSU 2 years ago. I mean, it's just, this is a freak show. I mean, what's going on? Anybody thinks this is a good idea, just wasn't thinking. It was not a good idea. Oh, the players ought to have a chance to leave. I was all for it if a coach leaves. That's it. You know, kids ought to have to pick schools for a reason. You shouldn't just one time be able to bail because you get your lip poked out, you got beat out.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think you're right. I think Mullen, and I had to learn this from watching you handicap and watching State play. I think he's a great game day coach. I think he's
great.
I think he's an awful roster builder when it comes to recruiting and getting the roster put together. I mean, he's had some great players. I mean, Chris Jones is an example. I mean, guys he pulled out.
He needs to go to the NFL, Mark.
Yeah.
He's a fabulous evaluator of talent. He's a horrible cloak. He can go draft it and go sign it in free agency, and those players don't care about being his buddy. They just want to win.
Right.
He's got a chance to be great.
Yeah.
And he is a fabulous quarterback developer. I think everybody's all pissed that Emory Jones is all conference. People are like, why do you think he's going to be all conference? Because he got Dan Mullen coaching him. I mean, Kyle Trask couldn't even start in high school. And he got the dude drafted.
Yeah.
I mean, that guy's done a masterful job. I'm telling you, going back, people that have been listening to us for this, you want to go watch the best quarterback coaching job in the history of college football? Go back to 2009, Mississippi State, and 2010, and watch what he did with Chris Relf. That guy ran the T in high school. He couldn't throw it from here to my hotel room door. And I'm telling you, that guy figured out how to win 9 games with Chris Relf and then go to a bowl game and just pound Michigan. The guy's a fabulous, fabulous coach, game day coach, home field coach, horrible recruiter.
Yeah.
And he's a great evaluator of talent, too.
Mm-hmm. And my point was is that he's going to be somebody that's going to benefit from the portal because you're going to get kids that have already left a program. And he's just going to say, look, man, you're past it now. Come here. Let's win. Look at the facilities. We can get it done. You know, a couple of other things I'll point out, just if you haven't found these weird nooks and crannies from last year. I mean, so App State, going to be a great team in the Sun Belt, has been year in, year out. Most likely Chase Bryce is going to be their quarterback. This is his third school. I mean, he was at Clemson. You got to remember the kid bailed Clemson out against Syracuse in that one game a few years ago.
Right.
Then he transferred to Duke, and he was awful last year. And now he's at Appy State. And I mean, so this kid's his third program, not third coaching staff, but third program. And so an Appy State team that I want to back, and I'm planning on backing him a lot. I hate this guy at quarterback because he wasn't good last year at Duke. And there's going to be a lot of pressure on him here, so we'll see. And then the other flip side of it is go pick up a magazine or go look it up and go look at Texas State with Jake Spavital last year. That guy doesn't sign one freshman. His entire recruiting class last year was JUCO, and I think there was only two, and the rest of them were all transfer portal kids. And I'm not saying that's bad, because he knows he's got about one or two years till he's got to win and get it done. Now, the roster's still really young. He didn't pull a Kansas and you went and got all those old guys. He still has a younger roster, but he built it off kids that have already, you know, taken a step, and they typically are stepping back from a Power 5 into a group of 5 sent into the Sun Belt. And so it's going to be interesting to watch how it plays out. And I think you're right. Teams like Georgia that already have a stacked roster, it can't be that hard to recruit Eric Gilbert to come to Georgia when you look at what he's got over there. And so it's crazy, but I don't think it's ever going to go away, so we might as well just get used to it.
Yep, I agree with you. We got to get used to it. I don't like it. Here's who I really think it's bad for. Most of all, I think it's bad for the bulk of these kids.
Probably.
Kids ought to have to learn lessons. At some point, you got to put your head down. You got to go to work. You got to dive in and you got to go earn it. It's going to get tough. And you got to fight. You got to scratch and you got to claw. And I think that lesson's being lost for so many kids. And unfortunately, that's one of the lessons from sports that really carries you forward in life.
Yeah, it's interesting because we've come so far so fast, and I'm going to screw this up, but we can jump. But you remember it wasn't a couple of years ago where the kid transferred to West Virginia so he could be closer to home because his dad was sick or something, and they wouldn't give the kid a pass so he could play. So he lost a year eligibility, and now here we are 2 years removed from that, and it's basically everybody's automatically eligible. And so, you know, I'm not going to dive into the ethics of it, how it's going to work. That's somebody else's game to manage. But I'm just telling you, from a gambling perspective, year in and year out, you better get ready to look at these rosters because they're turning over way faster than they ever have been. We're going to talk about some of those specifics when we get into the MAC here in a little bit. Little teaser there. You thought we were going to go with the SEC. Second thing, Scott, NIL. If you have not paid attention to this, name, image, likeness is finally come about. And we're only going to talk about this for a minute because it's not going to affect us this year from a handicapping perspective. It's going to affect rosters of the future. I firmly believe that. This started with Ed O'Bannon years ago with the lawsuit. EA Sports with college football was the biggest culprit of this and had to shut that game down. And then now here we are to where the players have, you know, the ability, and you've got to go read the rules on this because it's not as free-flowing as you think, but the players have the ability to hire a marketing agency if they choose, sign with a local, a regional, or a national company that they can sponsor and do whatever they're, you know, want to for X dollars amount that are out there. And you're already starting to see some nutty contracts that are getting put out. College Hunks, Moving Junk, signed a bunch of guys from Miami for $20,000. You've got a kid that's at the University of Tennessee who's a receiver there who is on the roster. He's actually an entrepreneur running his own landscaping business and ground covering business that he's been running since he was in high school. It's a $1 million business he's been running. And he started an agency now so he can help other players on his team find sponsorships. And so it's going to keep evolving. And trust me, a lot of people are going to figure out how to make money off of this deal. And so I'm interested, too, to see how that's going to play out over the next couple of years.
Yeah, I think there's several interesting points to this. I personally believe it's going to be a huge deal. I will tell you from contacts that I have, people I've talked to that are in, a lot of them do not feel like it's going to be the earth-shaking thing in college sports that I think it's going to be. I think basketball, college basketball, may be forever changed. Why in the hell do you want to go to the NBA and make, what is it, 1.3 million or 3 million or whatever, that I think it's $1 million a year they make, isn't it? Or is it 1.3 for three, something tiny, those first 3 years they're in the league? Why the hell you want to do that? When you, these shoe companies will throw gigantic dollars at you to go to college. I mean, can you imagine how much Zion, there's no telling what he got, because that's the dirtiest business. Now it isn't dirty. Now they just dole it out. How much Nike are they going to give Zion? Seriously.
Yeah.
For him to go pound it. I think basketball's first, a huge, it could change the landscape. And look, there'll be haves and have-nots in that deal, because there's just simply not that many basketball players like Zion and guys like that every year that can change it. The second thing is, what does it do for the non-revenue sports? Oh, swimmers. The people that literally are in college swimming and are Olympic athletes. Now they can get paid. I mean, you may have some swim guy or what, or swim girl rolling around Stanford making $8 million a year.
It's not going to get to that.
And then the flip side of this is the schools that have always cheated, and what happens? I mean, when does some booster say, well, I'll give every kid on the team $20,000, but I want it to count towards my seating for football.
Right.
You know, because I want it to count towards my skybox down payment.
Right.
You know, if I'm going to give out, you know, 20 mil or whatever, how long before that happens? You know, because it will happen. It is. I think this has got so many tentacles that, and I will also say that I believe the athletic directors that are not hiring people to figure out how to pay the baseball players. Look, I'm a Mississippi State guy. It's a huge part of our program. They get 11.7 scholarships at most schools. There's wiggle room around that. you know, at different schools, things like that. State's even figured out something that they do for JUCO guys now to try to get over that. There's a lot of different things. Just got to be available to every kid to get over that 11.7. Well, now you just pay guys. I mean, are you kidding me? I mean, my son, we go to the College World Series. He's 10. He's prime baseball age. He loves it, loves State. He's getting pictures with those kids, getting autographs with those kids. He gets a picture with Tanner Allen. How in the world are you not going to set Tanner Allen up for a signing? You know, $500 to show up at a birthday party. How many birthday parties could Dak Prescott have rolled through in Starkville, Mississippi for $500 a pop and been there 10, 15 minutes?
Well, I think you're
it's
right.
It's legal money.
Yeah. No, I think you're definitely on
to
something.
I think the ADs that aren't smart enough to put people in three or four guys that are creative and get them thinking about how to generate income for their guys, their athletic departments could be behind, because here's the deal. State's never, certainly not in this environment, going to be able to get players now. Like, I will tell you right now, I don't think State ever gets Jeffrey Simmons if NILs are legal when he's coming out of school as bad as Bama wanted him. And at the end of the day, they're going to be able to offer him those kinds of things that State can't do. There's no boosters big enough, but there's no Nike. Those guys will get behind that Bama program if it's a difference maker at a position. And a guy who's likely going to be a first rounder when he comes out, if he stays healthy, they'll take a risk on a kid. Boy, it changes the game. You better, if you're on a second tier program, you better figure out how to make your kids $500 a Saturday so that they actually got money to roll around, or you won't be able to get anybody. So I think this got the opportunity to be game-changing. You'll find some athletic directors who are smart, who go out and drive it. I mean, think about some of the MAC schools. We're going to talk about them again. Those are in some huge cities with major corporates. I mean, what do they start doing to keep kids at home, to keep them in a – man, the NFL will find you. It's great, but I mean, if you make $1 million and stay at home and go to Toledo, why wouldn't you?
it'll be interesting. I think that's still going to evolve several times over, so I don't know where it's going to go. This year, I think, is just kind of it got passed and they scrambled to get it done. So once this – it's like we see every – but I tell you the one thing, and we'll throw this out there, and then we're going to move on to talk about gambling. The one thing I think it may get rid of, though – is the knucklehead season. And I don't think I don't think we had it really this year, because COVID was so weird. These kids are probably, you know, all still trying to figure out what's going on. We haven't seen nearly the problems around campus, you know, except for Les getting a little mechanic with the girls apparently back in the day. But we haven't seen all the other stuff that typically goes on in the off season in the summer, because we're 6 weeks out from football, right? And so I think now that these kids are starting to look at it as their own business, their own opportunities, as athletic departments are probably going to have somebody that's in charge of marketing for their players, and if they're smart to do that, then, you know, these kids look at it and say, okay, you know what? I do need to get my ass in class. I do need to take care of my business on the field and off, because it creates more opportunities for me. And if they don't go to the league, which most of them won't, and it took this to get them to get a degree to realize how to market themselves, how to run a business, and how to, you know, improve society, then great, it's worked. I don't know that that'll be the case, but I'm always hoping for the best. 2021, brother, year of positivity for me, so I'm excited.
I like it. I agree with you. I think the other thing that's interesting, too, is how do these kids – this is the other thing. All of them have been on Twitter and Instagram as just a kid communicator. How many of them now translate that into influencer-type deals, get sponsorships? They're posting videos on YouTube, come up. There are so many revenue streams and opportunities out there for a kid. You're still working out. You're still doing all these things. Man, you put a training regimen together and stick it on YouTube and probably get 3 million kids following you and make a bunch of money. I mean, it is fascinating to me what's going to be going on. But I stand by the athletic directors. And there's a lot of them out there that think this is just, it's not going to change the game. It's not that big a deal. The young guy and the guys at the peripheral schools who get aggressive in this can change their career forever, because there are opportunities out there for these kids in schools that are smart, and they drive it for their own kids are going to benefit, and they've got an opportunity to set themselves on a different path and put themselves at a level where they probably never thought they could go. So there's a lot that I think, but I will say this, and this I will end on. I think the NIL is the end of the NCAA. It's over.
Yeah, I agree with that.
They dicked this up, not coming up with a plan and trying to hold on to amateurism for way too long. Now the schools don't need them. Yeah. If the Power Five doesn't take over the basketball and baseball tournaments where the NCAA makes all their money, they're idiots. They are just lazy. There's no other reason than not. So having said that, let's get into some games.
Let's dive into the MAC. We'll wrap it up real quick for last season. 2020 is a weird season. The MAC, they didn't start till really late in the year. Most of the teams only played 5 conference games. Some played less because of COVID protocols. We finished the season with Ball State, otherwise known as Testicle Tech, and Buffalo playing for the MAC championship. And Ball State gets it done. They were ahead of schedule for me. Buffalo had one of the best players in the country as far as fun to watch, and that was Jarrett Patterson, the running back. If you didn't see this kid from last year, he broke off some massive runs and was a ton of fun to watch. All in, the MAC is always going to be one of our bread and butter conferences. If you don't know this and you're new to listening to us or just getting into MACtion, you know, once you get to November, almost the entire schedule shifts to that Tuesday-Wednesday spot. We're going to try to do better this year about getting in front of those games and maybe even doing some podcasts in those. But when you look at the MAC, there's always massive amounts of separation because these teams just don't have a lot of depth. And it's also hard to come in and recruit some talent. A couple of things I want to point out before we dive into looking at this season. Ball State was ahead of schedule. They've got 2 wide receivers on this team that are probably going to be NFL caliber wide receivers that are both back for this season. So I'm excited to see what they're going to do. You've got Ohio and Frank Solich. Guy has been there, I think, 17 years now. And he's had the exact same almost the exact same coaching staff. Only major leave there was Joe Burrow's dad, who retired to watch Joe Burrow. Everybody else has been with this guy forever. They're steady Eddie. Scott's got some facts he can talk about on that. Bowling Green, one of the worst teams in the country. They're going to be one of the worst teams in the country again this year. Akron, Tom Arth. Guy got him a win last year, man. And if you watch that guy coach, he's excited. And he actually had job offers, NFL job offers to assistants. He came back here. So it could be interesting to see what you can get from that side. Kent State, if you get a chance, find you a Kent State game to watch. They average about 33 points a game, and they give up about 34. And they're probably going to score more this year and maybe give up more. They run at breakneck speed. Flip it around the other side of the division. You've got the West, Ball State, Toledo, Western Miss, Central Miss, Eastern Miss. All are pretty strong programs. Northern Illinois has fallen way back. You've got to assume that they are going to regress back to where they used to be. This was the powerhouse of the MAC when we started covering this conference 12 years ago. And so looking at the MAC, Scott, I'm not going to go into rosters. If you want to go do that, you can go download Phil Steele. You can go grab an Athlon. You can do all kinds of stuff from there. All we're trying to look at on these podcasts for the early season is giving you guys some value on either bets you can make from a future bet now. It could be specific games if there's games of the year line or something maybe if we found that you can pinpoint with a team that you may want to watch early so that you can jump on that. Scott, that being said, looking at the MAC, what is your first bit of gold that you're going to pull out of this fine conference?
The Buffalo Bulls will not win 8.5 games. I think they set this line when they thought Leopold was still coaching there because Maurice Lindquist is not going to get that done. I don't think there's any chance this team wins 8.5 games. I'll say this. I'm going to lose if they do because I'm betting it. Here's their schedule. Wagner at Nebraska, Coastal Carolina at Old Dominion. Now, I'll give you that non-con. They probably get 2 wins. I'd be shocked they don't beat Old Dominion. They're going to lose to Coastal Carolina, and they're going to lose to Nebraska. And then it's Western at home, at Kent State, Ohio, at Akron, Bowling Green, at Miami, Ohio, Northern Illinois, and at Ball State. So, if they really go 2-2 in the non-con, you got to figure out how to win 7 of 8 against that schedule. And you are not as good as Western. probably not as good as Ohio. I mean, you got to go to Miami. You're not as good as Ball State. I mean, Ball State's got everybody back from the team that won this league.
Yeah.
You know, so at the end of the day, I don't think there's any chance this team wins 8.5. I'm taking under 8.5, and that is one of my favorite over-under plays of the year.
I plan to fade Buffalo early as well. Here's why. If you go look at their coaching staff, if you don't know what happened, Leopold, who came from Wisconsin Whitewater, which was a Division III program, to take this job over a few years ago. You know, and at first the Buffalo fans were kind of like, they weren't that excited about him because Buffalo was trending in a positive direction. He actually improved the program. They were great, competitive, chance to win. You're right there, right? He ends up taking the Kansas job after they fired Les Miles after spring training. And so he leaves, yep. And they bring in a new coach, a brand new coach, who doesn't keep anybody that was on the staff. Not one coach that was on the staff is there right now. And they had 10 kids that hit the portal after spring ball. Now, a couple of them haven't landed anywhere yet, so I don't know if they're going to come back or not. Their roster, if you go look at recruiting rankings, is actually very high for the MAC. But I don't know where everybody's going to land on this thing. And so I just wonder, from a team chemistry standpoint, from coaches that haven't coached at this level before, as far as being a head coach and trying to run, I mean, I think you're just not going to get the same polished look from Buffalo that we've seen over the last couple of years. So I would agree with you. You're 8.5, yes. Under.
Here's the thing. I'm going to read. Here's the thing on Maurice Lindquist. He coached at State, so I'm familiar with him. He's a Baylor grad. Right, I'm going to read his coaching history briefly to you. 20, which was last year, was the Cowboys' defensive backs coach. They were awesome back there. A&M, defensive backs, 18 and 19. Minnesota, 17. Mississippi State, 16. Iowa State, 14 and 15. This dude's a job hopper. I mean, you go look, the longest stays got. He takes the co-DC job at Michigan and then leaves. Now, I understand you got a head coaching job, but my point being, it's nonstop. And I just, and then his coaching staff, he goes and gets Shane Montgomery, who was OC at JMU before this. He was at Miami, Ohio. He's a guy that's got some MAC area creds. And he gets Joe Cawthon, who was the defense coordinator at the end under Arkansas under Bielema. So, I mean, at the end of the day, I just don't have any confidence in his coaching staff. This is a first-time coach, and you're telling me a dude has got to go 7-1 in his league to get over?
Yeah, I'm not buying that. I'm selling that.
Yeah.
So, I would agree with you. I like the pick. Here's my first pick for you. Ohio, week 4. At Northwestern. Northwestern's got a shit ton of regression from last year. Northwestern put 4 kids in the NFL draft. I think that's right. 4 kids in the NFL draft, and one of them may have been signed as an undrafted free agent. Northwestern is not used to having that kind of talent. Ohio brings back everybody. You got the Rourke kid at quarterback, who him and his brothers, I think, have played there for 200 years. And then you've got Armani Rogers, who was at UNLV, is transferred in there. Big kid, big athletic kid. I think Ohio is actually probably my pick to win that side of the conference. But I like this game at Northwestern. I think Northwestern's going to sleepwalk into this spot. And Ohio, this is the biggest game on there. I mean, it's a great game for them. I like them in this spot. I think they're going to get the Big Ten upset. I'm calling for it now. I'll be betting the money line when we get to that week.
I like it. Another MAC game, September the 18th. The Toledo Rockets host the Colorado State Rams. And I think they're going to win this game just like they did in Colorado State in 2019. So I think they're going to win this game. They won straight up 41-35 in Fort Collins. They're 13-9 all-time versus the Mountain West. Toledo's one of the teams that actually has good athletes in this league. And I think that is why you see that kind of record. It is really interesting. They're 4-1 straight up against Mountain West Conference teams since 2016. So, I mean, that's a big deal. I honestly believe Toledo may be favored in this game when it comes out. I've not seen a line for it, but I think it's going to have to be, you know, 4 or 5 for me to not really be on top of it. I like this game. I think that is a straight up upset that they win for the Mac, get them a nice win in the non-conference.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. So we're pointing some of these out. If you get a schedule, print it out. If you've got your magazine, whatever. I don't know how you put it together. And we're talking about certain games of the year. Just make a circle around these games and take a look at them as you get a little bit closer to them, because you've got a lot of sandwich spots. There's no way some of these Power 5 schools that are going to have this matchup 3-4 weeks back before they climb into, you know, the beginning of their season, that they're going to be fully focused on what's going to go on in that particular game. Go ahead.
One other game that I like, a team that's kind of under the radar that I think is going to be better. I think Jim McElwain has got a pretty good team at Central Michigan. FIU coming to the Chippewas and Mount Pleasant on September the 25th. Same thing there. I think that'll be another opportunity for us to make some money, because I think Central is going to be pretty darn good. I think McElwain, he kind of got some bad love. Yeah. I don't know if he was a great fit at Florida, but at the end of the day, the guy's not a bad football coach, and I think he's showing that at Central. They got everybody back on offense, and I think it's going to be interesting to see how that team finishes out. But that's a game that I will be watching at the end of September.
Yeah, FIU's a dumpster fire, too. They didn't win a single game last year. And so supposedly they're going to be a little bit better, but we'll see about that. So the other thing I want to look at, Western Michigan. They're over-under win total 6.5. I like Western Michigan to get the over in this spot. They've got two Power 5 teams in Michigan and Pitt early in the season, but then they've got Illinois, San Jose State, and at Buffalo. So I think they're going to win. I think they'll go 2-2 through that stretch. And then in the back end of their conference, they've got Akron, Eastern Michigan, and Northern Illinois, which all three of those games I think are winnable, and they're going to be okay. And you got a lot of coin flips in here. So I like Western Mich. I like what they're returning. Over-under 6.5. I'll take a coin flip on this one, Western Michigan over 6.5.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think this might be the best team in the league. They got a really good chance to be the best team in the league. A lot of guys back. It's amazing how many, when you go through and look at how many of these mid-level teams, they've got 10 and 11 starters back on sides of the ball. It's amazing. And I do think we're going to see some upsets because of that, because you're essentially getting a bunch of kids that've got 6 years.
Yeah.
And you're going to be playing some bigger schools. I think we may get some upset cities in September. It's going to be a fun time to watch. I agree with you about Western. You look at this schedule, and I like it. I think San Jose State, they can absolutely 100% win that ball game. Look, Ball State beat, they put a pounding on San Jose State last year. So no reason that Western can't. They're very similar football teams. Illinois State's a win in the non-conference. What more importantly to me, as I look at it, they play some of the poor teams on the road is what I like. At Buffalo, I've already told you, I don't think Buffalo is going to be nearly as good. At Northern Illinois to end the year, I think both of those are games that in most years when people look at this schedule, they think, oh, those are L's. And this year I don't. I think they're probably two wins. Now, they play some really good football teams from the MAC, but you got them at home, and they're certainly going to have an opportunity to win that as one of the best teams in the league. They get they got Toledo on the road, but they get Kent, Ball State, and Central, and then Akron at home. I think his team gets to 7 wins. The bottom line is they'd gotten seven last year, and they've done it every year except 17. They went 6-6 that year. So I think they're gonna get 7 wins.
Yeah, that's what I said. You got a lot of coin flips in there, but there's 6 wins on that schedule when I look at it. And so that's the reason I like that over 6.5 spot that's there. If you're trying to pick a conference winner, this one's tough. You take a flyer on Kent State. They're 15-1. Maybe if you want to throw some pizza money at that one. Because that side of the conference, Ohio, I think, is probably going to win. When you come down to the other side of the conference, Central, Western, Ball State. I like Ball State in there. Western Michigan. I don't know. I mean, none of the odds. There's a massive step between the top 4 teams in the league, which are plus 325 down to plus 450, and then it drops down into the thousands, you know, or 10 to 1. And so I can't figure out who I think's going to win the MAC. Do you have a pick on who you think is going to win either side or win the whole thing?
I think Western's the best team in the league.
Okay.
I'm with you. I think Kent is much improved. I really do. I don't think Miami, Ohio is good enough to win the league because I don't like their schedule. Not a huge fan of Ohio's schedule either. I think the team that might could sneak up and surprise, because I don't think Toledo, Western, or Ball State would be a surprise if any of those three teams won the league. And I think all three of them are capable of doing it. I think Central's the team that if somebody's going to pop up and surprise people, I think Central Michigan's the team that could do it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I like McElwain a lot. I liked him at Florida. I liked him on top of a shark. And so, you know, I'm all for, you know, and so I'm all for the guy in this one. But, yeah, I agree with you. Last thing I'll tell you, if you want to highlight a team that you want to look at every single week, I would tell you take a look at Kent State totals. And I would definitely tell you to look at these early in the week because these numbers, especially early in the season, because these numbers are going to skyrocket. Now, it's interesting. There are two of their non-cons they've got are at Texas A&M and Kyle Field, which is going to be first weekend of September. I think Texas A&M is going to be much improved. Their defense is going to be good. That may be a game I back off of or look at some other options. And then you've got at Iowa. And Iowa, offensively, is one of the slowest football teams in the country. You know, Kirk LaFrance's son, I think Brian LaFrance's son is the offensive coordinator, and he literally handicaps, and I think he tries to keep the Iowa offense under 21 points. But defensively, they just sit up in a straight, you know, 4-3 zone and basically just cover everything and smother Kent. You know, so I don't know where that one's going to go. But when they get into conference play, look for a ton of points, and I think there'll be a lot of opportunities there to hit some overs on this Kent State team.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I think also I'm going to be interested to see that Buffalo-Nebraska line because I candidly do think Nebraska is going to be a little better.
Oh, boy.
Candidly, they can't be much worse. But I'm telling you, I think Buffalo takes a huge step back early in the season. I think that line may be tighter based on reputation than it should be.
I hope you're right, but it'll be interesting when those lines come out. So, folks, here's what we're going to do. Got this covered, knocked out the MAC. We got all the other conferences to go. We got about 6 weeks. We're going to try to turn the content out as much as we can. You can hit me up at @NetMark. You can hit him up at ScottDenson1. We'll try to answer all your questions. Feel free to DM us. I've had some requests. We've gone through. We've read the reviews. We're changing up the show a little bit as we start to get into it. We've done this now, Scott, 12 years. You know, and so I think that's right. I'd said 10 last year, and somebody's like, no, dude, you've been doing this 11 years. And so we've been at this a long time. It's a lot of fun. We enjoy interacting with everybody. We're here to have fun. We're also here to try to win some money and give you some ideas of some opportunities to bet on some games. And that doesn't mean we have to bet on every game, but we can definitely take a look at them. And so, Scott, with that being said, I am excited about 2021, full stadiums. And the one thing I would be interested to see is, after being in Omaha and after watching these fan bases, like at these pro games that have come through, like baseball. I don't know if you watched the San Diego Padres play yet. There's 45,000 people on a Tuesday at a baseball game. So I think these stadiums are going to be crazy, not just in the SEC, not just in the Big Ten. I think across the country we are going to see a shit ton of people show up for live sports when football starts.
I couldn't agree more. It is. I think people are going to be yoked up, and man, just the environment from every fan base, honestly, in Omaha was impressive. I mean, you were there, you saw it. I mean, everybody was kind of going at it and having a good time. And Omaha's a phenomenal environment for it. But boy, it was. I mean, I agree with you. I think people are yoked up and they're ready to turn it loose.
Yeah.
We see a full house at Stanford and at UCLA. We're going to know people are officially turning it loose.
Come on now. I'll tell you this and then we'll get out of here. So a bunch of my friends are going to the LSU-UCLA game in the Rose Bowl opening weekend. And they're like, hey, you want to go? And I'm like, I'm going to pass. I said, have you been to the Rose Bowl? I said, I will go to the Rose Bowl to watch the Rose Bowl. And I said, that stadium's kind of a dump. It hasn't been updated much. And I said, you're out there kind of in Pasadena, not easy just to roll out and party and whatnot. I go, it's old, so it's kind of flat. But they're, like, concerned LSU's only getting 5,000 tickets or something. And I said, trust me when I tell you, trying to get a ticket to a UCLA football game is not a hard process. I said, all you got to do is have a little bit of cash in your hand and show up, and you can find them. Because there's nobody that goes to those games.
Nobody. it's crazy. I will tell you, I can't wait to get to that league, those leagues, and that game. That's a fascinating game to me. There are some great non-conference games this year.
Well, there's some great games early in the season. I mean, week one, Penn State, Wisconsin? Come on.
Yeah. I mean, look, that LSU-UCLA game is really going to be a lot of fun. There's some great games. I mean, that Georgia-Clemson?
Yeah.
I mean, you want to hear the Boo Birds get on Kirby. You let him lose that game. And let's face it, they're probably the underdog.
They are. You know?
Well, I don't mean just the odds. I mean, they're probably not the better football team looking at it on paper. And I just think it's going to – I think it's phenomenal. I think it's going to be – this is going to be a fun, fun year to watch. I'm telling you, I think some of these sixth-year teams – sixth-year seniors at some of these mid-level teams, it's a game-changer. Like, had COVID happened while Dan Mullen was at Mississippi State and those guys that were just off the grid of going to the NFL could have gotten a sixth-year – there's no telling what Mullen could have done with him. You know, just the experience factor. And there's coaches like that out there. You know, Arkansas, you know, some of those guys, they're going to get another shot at these kids. It's going to be phenomenal to watch. And I can't wait to Mark Stoops. I mean, there's guys out there that I think have got a chance to make some noise this year with all the kids they've got back. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Folks, we're going to be here all year. We're going to put a couple of these out probably in a couple of weeks. They'll be coming randomly until we get back into our season schedule. We appreciate you. Share us with your friends. Give us a review. Let us know what you want to hear. We'd love to get back to you on anything that we can. College football, we're back, brother, and I am excited. We'll talk to you next time.